we had the farm show on the morning of the 26th. It was out here at the fairgrounds. And that night, the night of the 26th, it started raining that night. And then early the morning of the 27th is when it started freezing real bad. And I remember telling Steve Tyler here that if this gets real nasty, we're all going to learn a big lesson on how we've come so dependent upon electric and electronics and everything. And because you could tell it wasn't one of those storms that we're normally used to down here in the Boot Hill, because it just seemed like gosh, how do you explain it? It was one of those storms that you knew just didn't feel right.
Comps would be a good word for it.
Yeah, we got the first wave on Monday night.
Yeah,
and that really wasn't so bad. There were people without power. It was the Tuesday night second wave that came in that really just devastated everybody.
Well, what were some of your first indications that this was going to be, worse than usual?
Well, when the first wave went through here Monday night, and our meteorologist was telling us there was going to be two waves of it, and he said the second wave was going to be worse. The first one wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. And, I mean, MoDOT was able to keep up with the highways and everything was still pretty good. But then that second wave came in, and it was a lot bigger than what we even expected it to be. And, I mean, things started freezing up, and parts of Kennett started losing power real quick. And then we lost it, noon on Tuesday.
Yeah, noon Tuesday.
Well, it was scary that first night. You began to hear the trees crack, pop, and limbs, limbs as big as your legs falling, and then eventually it toppled the old Jones Park here in town. You wouldn't believe it. Still looks like a battlefield. And one of the linemen told his wife in a story that came out later, he looked outside the night of the storm, and he said, "Well, honey," he said, "I don't think I'll see you for a while. I'll be out working." So
when you lost power at the radio station, what happened at that point? You have a generator? What'd you guys do?
We were in the dark. We were off the air for 24 hours.
Yeah, 24 to 48.
About 36 hours, because what we did was we first got KCRV over in Caruthers, our station over in Caruthersville came up first, and we were able to get it back on with a small generator, and then the next day. We got it back on the air on Thursday morning. This would have been early Thursday morning. They got it all working Wednesday night, but it got it back on the air Thursday morning. And then Friday morning, we got KBOA back on the air. And it was Sunday before we were able to get KTMO and KGLU and KMIS back up.
Were there any stations on the air? I mean, who was serving the community during those 48 hours that you guys were down?
Nobody. I mean, the station in Paragould was down. The stations over in Dyersburg were down for a temporary part of time. But then when they came back up, Steve, they didn't say squat about anything. And that's one of the things that really scared us is that, I was in Paragould, and they were giving all doom and havoc down there for about 5 minutes, and then they go right back to their music formats like nothing was going on.
What did you guys do programming-wise once you got back on the air?
We just opened the microphone and started talking.
Yeah.
Well, now, what did you have when you got back on the air? You said you were just with generators?
Yeah, we had a 5,500-watt generator over at the over on the North Bypass. Where the KBOA transmitter is. And with that 5,500-watt generator, we were able to power the KBOA transmitter, which is a 1,000-watt transmitter, in one studio over there. So we had basically a control board, two microphones, a telephone, and a transmitter, and that's all we had.
Now, you say a telephone. This was a landline phone?
Yes, sir.
Did you guys have any cellular service during this point?
Yeah, it was on and off, but we did have cell service, yeah.
So what did you guys do from a staffing, reporting? I mean, you didn't have wire services, I'm assuming, or did you at that point?
No.
Steve, to tell you the truth, Steve, we didn't give a hoot in hell what was going on out there in the rest of the country. The three of us sat down behind microphones from 6 o'clock in the morning to 6 o'clock in the evening. It was nothing but like a talk show.
Yeah, when we went on the air at 6 a.m. that morning, we didn't know diddly squat about what was going on the outside world. That's why we went to our listeners, because that's where we started gathering a lot of information. And then once everyone realized we were on the air at 1540 a.m., KBOA a.m., then that's when we started, getting officials and everybody coming in.
Right.
And then we were then bombarded by people coming in the door, especially, fire and city officials and everybody coming in at that time.
So did you just have one phone line coming in, or did you have multiple lines? You were able to take
one phone line. And it was, to tell you the truth, it was busy from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m.
So what sort of priority did you give to the various, just this flood of information you were getting from, the various law enforcement agencies? I mean, how did you decide what to go with, or was it just whatever came up next?
It was whatever came up next, dude.
Right.
Because these people around here were so lost, they didn't know what was going on. They didn't know, and so more or less what it was just an open forum for everybody and anybody that had information. I mean, we'd have people call from over in Tennessee, tell us that they were out of power. We'd have people from Arkansas call and tell us they were out of power. And that's more or less how we were able to paint the picture of what exactly was going on.
And what was ironic was a person would call in with a question, not knowing what to do in a situation. And immediately, this happened time upon time again, we'd have one caller say, how can I do this or how can I find that? And the very next caller would have the answer. I mean, and that's how we went through the day. Yeah.
Were any of those calls that you were getting of an emergency nature?
Yeah.
Yes.
We did have one. A gentleman called up and was very sick. It turned out he'd been sick for a couple of days, and Charles called an ambulance while we were all talking to him on the Charles called an ambulance with his cell phone while we were on the phone with him, got his address and everything. And we asked his family. His family gave us an update on how he was doing later. He just didn't want to be a burden to anybody.
So, you guys still with me?
Yeah, we're here.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
It got awful quiet, and I couldn't tell if I had lost you there. What was the question I was going to ask you? So how long did that sort of just one call after the other marathon emergency stuff go on for you guys?
Hey, it went on like that for a week.
Yeah.
And not only calls, but we had people coming in. And there was two status meetings a day in the morning at 8 o'clock and at 5. And the mayor would come out at 5 and give us an update on progress, and we'd have a report in the morning from Larry Jones on the progress that was being made, at least in for the first week or so. And then eventually folks over in Northeast Arkansas began to call. They had been calling all along, but we began to get more information from the authorities over there. So it built as we went.
So was it just the three of you for a week like this?
Yeah. That's it.
Yeah.
How did you work out the schedule? Just when somebody couldn't talk anymore, somebody else would sit down?
I got a trunk of Hall's cough drops right now. If you'd like to borrow one, I'm thinking about opening up a Hall's cough drop store.
And that was kind of the a running joke. One couple drove by, and they called on the phone first, and they said that buttermilk was good for your throat, and Monty was losing his throat, so they brought out some buttermilk. And he wouldn't drink the buttermilk, and Steve Tyler and I made fun of him, and we drank the buttermilk.
Well, you drank the buttermilk.
Well, I want to get you involved, too. But anyway, then they began to bring out Hall's cough drops, and then one of the pharmacies began to bring out a medicine for us, a throat spray. And, of course, Monty, he was the one who needed it. I didn't do that much talking.
And I heard, I've heard so many just wonderful stories from folks down there. I mean, practically the first thing they would say in an email or a phone call was, what a terrific job you guys did, and how much the community relied on what you were doing.
Well, Steve, you know, the thing is that, and we were a little bit embarrassed about it at the, and when we got back over here to the main building, we found out that the folks, that a lot of the folks over in Northeast Arkansas were completely in the dark as well, because the stations in Jonesboro and Perigold, more or less when Jonesboro and Perigold got their lights back on, they just more or less forgot about Northeast Arkansas. And so then we were stretched ourselves even out further, where we were taking care of Northeast Arkansas and the Kennett area. I mean, we had people calling from as far north as Sykeston, as far south as Blytheville. I mean, or as west as Pocahontas, and as east going over to Ripley, Tennessee. And the thing is and a couple of times our boss wanted to sort of back off on things, but the thing was is that we had 83-year-old people calling us that were in their homes without heat, you know, and they were getting along just fine. They just wanted somebody to talk to.
Yeah.
And you know, and we didn't give a hoot in hell what they would. I mean, you know, if they wanted to tell us their power was out, that was fine.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, the thing that was really great about it, Steve, is that in the whole week, we probably had three negative calls the whole time.
Yeah.
I mean, the rest of it was just like the whole family was on a big old party line talking to each other.
it seemed like, you know, what a lot of our listeners were calling out, especially those, you know, in the rural areas, they were calling in. They were calling in. We knew they didn't have power, but they would call in. I think it was just a way to say, "Hey, I've reached somebody. They know I'm here now, and I'm going to be okay." And that's sort of what we got from it, was like, "Hey, somebody knows I'm here." And we time and time again, we had people say, "Well, you guys are a real lifeline. You're the only communication we've got with the outside world," I told Monty the other day, and we keep getting letters and emails and from listeners who are saying thank you. It really brings home a power of this media that we have that I've never ever experienced before. I've been doing this since 1974, and I've never experienced anything like this in my life.
I understand that there were just numerous instances where the community sort of hooked up with you guys and provided things like gloves and face masks or ski masks for some of the line workers. Can you tell us about some of those stories?
We had a lady call up. We had a lady come by the radio station. I guess it was the second day we were doing this. And she said, "You know, those guys, those linemen, they don't have nothing on their faces at all. And they're freezing to death," and she was looking for some of them to buy, and so we just got on the air and told people to bring them by the station. And we had a basket out front, we had a basket out in the lobby, and they'd come by and drop off gloves, and they'd drop off face masks, they'd drop off hunting hoodies. I mean, you name it, they'd drop them off, they'd drop off gloves and everything. One lady found a bunch of felt up in her attic, and she made a bunch of scarves and brought them. And then the power plant up at New Madrid brought down 400 pair of gloves before it was over with. I mean, you know, we just get on the air and they'd start bringing stuff.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Yeah,
it really was.
You know, it sounds like radio. Hometown, local, community radio at its absolute best. Have you guys, are you far enough away from this yet to be able to take anything away from it that you might incorporate into how you guys do radio or program your radio station going forward?
I think it gets back to the basics. I mean, we didn't have any computers. We had, what, two CD players?
We had two CD players. We used those just to take... Just to give ourselves a break, we take like maybe a 10-minute break every once in a while.
Put gas in the generator. two microphones, a space heater, which really it put out a little bit of heat, and then we had a coffee pot, and that was about it.
Yeah.
Were you guys sleeping at the station?
No.
I think one thing that affected me is the when people would call in, you could hear the concern in their voice. You could hear some anxiety. And one thing that Steve and Monty did was just be totally positive and try to be upbeat. You know, we put a little humor in there, but just try to keep people, you know, knowing that we're going to get through this, we're going to get through it together, making sure that everybody was upbeat about it. We had counselors. We had a counselor to come out and talk for what? You, Steve, about 30?
Yeah, he talked about 30 minutes.
And then we gave out a telephone number that people could call us, an 800 number they could call and talk to a counselor. And you know, just things like that, I think, really helped make the process go a lot better.
Now that you've been through this, and obviously, hopefully a once-in-a-lifetime thing, is there anything you take away from this that you, I mean, are you any better prepared for the next disaster like this? Is there anything that you think, man, next time we got to do this?
Steve, my wife, the day that the lights came back on at our house, she went out and bought two kerosene lamps and a battery-operated radio. So that's how we're getting started at my house. Here at the radio station, we're already looking at generators and stuff to where we won't be off the air like we were before. Steve, you know how these radio stations are. They've been here for 60 years. They've always been a real tight part of the community. And sure, you know, it's a business, but between Charles and Steve and myself, we've got over 100 years of experience in the radio business. And
I think Charlie's got almost that, doesn't he?
Huh?
Charlie's got almost 100 years.
Charles has got most of it, of course, you know. But you know what it's all about. In the bigger cities, honest to gosh, Steve, our owner down at Memphis didn't even know how bad it was till he came up here.
Yeah.
And when he came up here, his story had changed. His tune had changed. He was wanting us to head back to our regular formats and everything, but once he got up here and saw exactly what was going on and listened to me and Steve and Charles on the air, he had a completely different change on it.
You know, that leads me to what was going to be my last and most important question. Did you get all the spots made up?
You know what? I don't think a single one of our clients really give a hoot about their spots.
I wouldn't have wanted my commercial to be on in the middle of all of that.
Well, we had one of the local banks called and said, I want to buy as many spots as I possibly can on KBOA because it's the most listened to thing on the earth right now. And he was just joking. What was really great about it is that it was a very serious situation, but we still did have the lighter parts of it. I mean, it made everybody feel so much more comfortable. I mean, we had one guy call up and said there was a bull chasing his truck down the street, and stuff like that. I mean, it kept it all humorous the whole time.
Were you able? I don't see how you could have. Now that before I even asked the question, I was going to ask if you were able to record any of this, but probably not.
Yeah, we recorded. After we got back over here to the main stage, main building, we were able to record all of our conversations with everybody.
Because I'm sure. Go ahead, Chuck.
One thing that happened that was real touching is that a lot of kids would come out. Their parents would bring them out. They wanted to make us cookies or make a sign and then they started giving signs to the and I think there's one town around. I think it was Cardwell. Started making signs, little Valentine's cards for the linemen. So it got to, you know, it got everybody involved. And I thought that was just, you know, we're hearing so much today about we all need to work together. This was one instance where everybody was working together.
You know, I think Monty got a letter, the other day from a couple who said that they really did not listen to radio a lot. They were not real big radio listeners. And now they hardly leave the radio off. Now it's like it's constantly on. It gives you a kind of a humbling power of the medium that that we have, and it's something like I said. I don't think either of us will ever forget the rest of our lives.
Well, John would have loved it.
Yeah, it reminds me of some of those old days, and I think that the community was very fortunate that they had three veterans like you guys who knew what to do and what not to do, that you understood, I think, I don't want to say the opportunity here, because I know you didn't look at this as an opportunity, but you saw the necessity for really being that connection, that voice for the people, while that was, dark and cold and scary. So,
you want to know something, Steve? Not to disagree with you there, but I think the three of us, we've grown up with this business. I don't think one of us thought about what we were doing when we got started in this thing, and it was just tongue in cheek the whole time. I mean, we didn't know what was going to happen next. And, the one phone call that I'm going to remember to the day I die was we got a phone call from a guy named Jim, who was with one of the power companies out of McPherson, Kansas. And they were heading back home, after being here for 2 weeks. And he said, "I have never seen an area damaged as bad as this area was damaged, and for so many people to gather around and become one big family in my life as this bunch has here. And if we had just one little bit to do with that, I am tickled to death."